And our connection this hour will be made next Friday, about 10 days from now, when our region moves into phase 4 of the reopening plan. And that will happen, assuming there is no spike in infections and hospitalizations. And that means fitness centers, gyms, and community organizations can reopen. The YMCA of Greater Rochester will reopen next Friday, assuming all of those things happen. But not all of the locations for the Y will open. Yesterday, the Y notified members of its plans, wanting to give everyone time to prepare for some changes that are coming. Almost immediately, a number of Connections listeners got in touch to tell us that the list for reopening includes, yes, the most high-profile suburban locations like Pittsford and Penfield, and the list does not include some city branches. The critics wanted to know, is this a case of the YMCA favoring the mostly white, wealthier suburbs over the more diverse, less economically robust city? In the Y's recent annual report, here's how they describe their own mission. Quote, "Now more than ever, the growing socioeconomic diversity between our urban and suburban populations requires the YMCA of Greater Rochester to think innovatively about our facilities. Our interconnected association model allows for the Y to nimbly provide transformational service to those who need it most," end quote. During a pandemic, is it fair to ask the Y to first serve those who need it most? Or is it fair to say that every organization is hurting financially and must make decisions about how to sustain, how to stay open at all? We're grateful that the YMCA of Greater Rochester is joining us to answer these questions and more this hour. Our guests include Kevin Fitzpatrick, the COO, the Chief Operating Officer of the YMCA of Greater Rochester. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Kevin, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's nice to have you. It's nice to have Pam Cowan, Chief Marketing and Experience Officer for the Y of Greater Rochester. Pam, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Evan. Nice to talk to you.
And Chris Widmeyer's with us, a longtime member of the YMCA. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Evan.
So, Kevin, why don't you run down the list for us as best you know, we could probably talk all day about some of the nuts and bolts, but why don't you kind of give us the snapshot of what is coming members' way, assuming things stay on course for next Friday?
Well, I'm knocking on wood because we hope we're the governor's phase four. That's what we've been told. We don't have confirmation, but we will start our what we're calling our phase one opening of our branches. So it's really based on the safety of members and really financial viability of opening some of these YMCAs that are able to socially distance first, see what our experience is, see if our members are actually coming back and like what they see and what they feel. And if that happens, then we'll move to our phase two and our phase three opening plans of our branches. But as anybody, we're at 50% capacity. We'll ask our staff to wear masks. We'll ask our members to, when they come in, to scan in through a scanning app. So again, safety is paramount, but also making sure that members feel comfortable so then they will continue to come back day after day and week after week.
Okay. And which branches, roughly speaking, opening as we look across the region? What's open, what's not?
So when we talked about that, you talked already about our Pittsford and our Penfield branches. But in the suburbs, also on the east side, our Bayview branch will not be opening. On the west side of town, our west side branch will open, but our northwest branch will not open in the first phase. And then in the city, we will open our Maplewood branch and our Southwest branch, but we will keep our Carlson branch closed. And again, we'll have limited hours at all of those facilities based on attendance.
Okay. And let me ask Pam Cowan, as someone who's not only the chief marketing, but the experience officer, I know what you wanted to do was communicate in advance with members, make sure people know what's open, what's not, what are the hours going to be, what are the expectations? What do you expect when it comes to whether your member is going to come back, Pam?
Well, you know, I think that's a really interesting question. So it's really important to us that we give our members time to digest. One of the things that's been happening for us internally is that we've had this information, right? We've mulled over it. We've thought about it. This isn't new to us. We're not going to have everyone expect to just take all this information in one day and go, oh, yep, got it. They're going to have questions, and that's why we're here. But when it comes to, you know, what can we hope? You know, we've talked to some of our colleagues across the movements, you know, at WISE throughout the nation, and some people have already reopened. They're in their third or fourth week of reopening. And what they're telling us is that about 20% of their average membership visits come back in that first week. And after that, you know, it gains maybe 10, 15% each week. So we don't have a better gauge than the information that our colleagues are sharing. So we use that in our decision making. We don't think we're going to be overrun, but we don't know. We think that we have enough branches open to be able to understand the population, understand our members' desires and needs, and hone in on every new policy and procedure so that we get it right and we service everyone appropriately.
And Kevin, as you mentioned, you know, some suburban locations opening, Maplewood will open in the city, but my understanding is the hours are not always the same there. And it looks to me, tell me if I'm wrong here, that when you compare Maplewood to Pittsford Penfield, there's going to be reduced hours at Maplewood, not in the suburbs. Is that true? And if that's true, why is that true?
It's not true. All of those locations in the suburbs are opening later and closing earlier, just like we have at Maplewood. So we have cut hours. All of our hours across the board were not the same or not consistent. It was based on member usage and visits during the time of day. So again, every Y has been cut from opening to closing times as we start. And then again, as we see people coming back, we'll add on, we'll add days, we'll add times once we know when people want to come back and once we know where they're coming and when, and that they feel safe coming to our branches.
Now, let me turn to Chris for some of his thoughts. And I will also say to listeners here that I do understand that when there is change in the community, we will hear from the people who don't like it or have problems with it. I mean, the people who are members of the Y and are thrilled that they're reopening didn't all email us at Connections yesterday saying, look at this, they're reopening, it's terrible. I mean, I understand that we tend to hear from people who are concerned. And I know that there's a mix of views and probably a lot of members who are thrilled to hear that 10 days from now, they're going to have a chance to go back to their Y. But there's many who won't. And Chris Woodmire is a longtime member of the YMCA. You raised some concerns, Chris, and I'd like you to go ahead and air them out and let's talk about them. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, well, I have spent most of my life going to the Maplewood branch of the YMCA. I swam on the swim team there. And now I've been really excited that my wife and I have adopted that as kind of our home branch. As adults and go over there to swim and work out, and have always been committed to the Y because it has the community focus that a health club does not have. And so in that mission statement, you know, one of the things that they point out in the mission statement is that they're trying to provide equal opportunity for urban and suburban residents. And, you know, one of the things that's really interesting in Rochester is that that's really coded language. And it's hard to tease out what people really mean when they say, like, differing socioeconomic statuses without mentioning race. We have to mention race in these kinds of things and the geography and availability of amenities. You know, any decision has implications around race and economics and geography. So one of the things, like, the hours that they're going to be open, I'm looking at the hours right now. The Maplewood branch says it's going to be closed Sunday, where the East Side Shaolin and West Side is going to be open from 8 to 1 Sunday. And the published hours are, you know, what I see here on the website they're very different in the city-wise. The Southwest Y is only going to be open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And so it's interesting to me to think about from the perspective of trying to meet the needs of the community. Both the Maplewood YMCA and the Southwest Y have members in the neighborhood that have been deeply affected by, you know, the riots and the windows are broken on the stores next door to the Maplewood Y. And so there's a great need to serve people in that Maplewood neighborhood. And so was that considered? Was that part of the decision making? And so I'm just curious about, you know, learning more about how those decisions were made, because it's important for us to understand how the things that I've brought up were considered and discussed as decisions were made. And so I'm excited looking forward to learning a little bit more today.
All right. So let's have Kevin start there. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I'll let Pam jump on that one, because she was part of the team as we put that together.
Okay, Pam.
So, you know, I think, you know, we talked a little bit about it, but when we look at member usage, that was a lot of what we looked at when we thought about coming back online. So I think Chris has some really valid points. I think that we have areas of our community who have been impacted very, very heavily throughout the last 3 months, and even more so in the last 3 weeks. We want to be that safe place for people to come back to. But when we started looking at how do we bring these operations back online, we looked back at the last 6 months of member usage, and we said, when are people really coming to our branches? That's what helped us determine just a starting point. And I'll be very clear, these are just a starting point. We may open and we may see that the demand at Maplewood is so strong that within the first week, we reevaluate and we say, you know what? We do need to be there on Sunday. And you know what? We need to be open more on Saturday. We're very open to those conversations. We just don't know yet. So when we looked at the scans of when people were coming and we talked to our colleagues about what their attendance looked like the first couple of weeks, these were the best decisions we were able to make.
Okay. Were the decisions overall, especially the prolonged shutdowns at Monroe, Carlson, is this primarily about money? And Kevin, I'll ask that to you. Is this primarily about money?
I wouldn't say primarily. I would put it really into two buckets. It's about safety and finances, making sure that we can operate safely, that our members feel comfortable when they come back. 50% of all of our revenue that's generated from the Y is generated through membership. So we need to make sure that our members feel safe and they can come back. And then we can start hopefully bringing the rest of our programs back. Evan, I'm not sure if you know, but as the governor announced, there's no overnight camp. So we aren't able to open any of our overnight camps. Our day camps, which we're very happy that he was able to say, yes, can go, are operating at a reduced capacity. So all of our other paid programs are suspended. So we don't have revenue coming in. So our best hope is to make sure our members feel safe and secure when they come to the Y so they can come back. Before this pandemic started, we had over 25,000 members units at our Y. 10,000 of them now are suspended and 2,000 of them have canceled. So we're at less than almost 50% of what our membership revenue was. We're hoping people will come back. We're just not sure yet.
Okay. Chris, do you want to follow up on that?
Well, I'm curious in terms of the usage statistics and kind of that broad view of what a YMCA is for. You know, I'm curious if you included things like daycare in thinking about, you know, how people are using the Y, or is it just coming in to work out? And so I'm curious if you could shine a little more light on that of when you say usage statistics, what you mean.
Well, you know, I think that's a great question, Chris. And I think usage actually is a culmination of everything that happens at our branches. So when we look at people coming into our branches, it's for all services. It's for Child Watch, which is the free care that we give members so that they can work out and have their kids watched for 2 hours. It's everything. So it's any time you step foot into our building, whether it's to swim, to work out, to socialize, to bring your children, those are the things that we looked at.
Okay. And I definitely recognize the challenge that you face as a large organization in this time and being membership driven. And I think that's, and kind of was looking at some of the other revenue streams like camps and, you know, there's the annual campaign that the YMCA does a great job of providing scholarships to families that need it. And I think that those sorts of things, you know, are interesting to consider in all of this, that there's a you know, when you say who are you serving and who's coming in and what, you know, the relationship to what people need from the Y is. And so I appreciate you sharing that you thought broadly, but I just wonder, you know, in that desire to serve people in the urban areas and suburban areas equally, and what that means in Rochester is as white folks and Black and Hispanic indigenous people of color equally, you know, where did that come into the decision making, and was that even, you know, was that how was that discussed?
You know, I think it's interesting. I think that there are maybe some generalizations that we're making right now that might not necessarily be fair. I don't think that our suburban branches only serve white people, and I don't think that our urban branches only serve black people or diverse people. So I think that it's a fair question, but I think that we have to look a little bit deeper at our membership bases to see who we serve at each location. I'm not at all trying to paint the picture that I believe that, you know, it's 50-50 across the board, but I would like to at least point out that I believe the diversity in our membership base at each branch would probably be surprising. I can tell you right now, I don't have stats on it, so I wouldn't be able to tell you like what the breakdown is, but if you go to one of our Ys, the number of different faces that you see is one of the things I can speak for myself, I'm most proud of. So access for all is part of our mission, and I truly believe that. The location does play a part in access to all, but it's not the only piece.
Okay. Let me jump in with a couple questions there on that note. And, you know, Pam and Kevin, I was challenged on this program a week ago by Jerome Underwood, who is obviously one of the most important figures in our community as we deal with as we try to break through in the anti-poverty initiative, as we think about equity. He challenged me. He said essentially as a white leader, a white person in the community, a white figure of prominence, challenge organizations, corporations. He pointed, for example, to Wegmans, and he said, you know, why has Wegmans, in his view, you know, not invested in the city or divested from the city? Is this an unfair comparison? Is it fair to ask if this is a moment where, at least for now, during this pandemic, there is more emphasis outside the city than on the city? I mean, Kevin, is that fair, or do you not see it that way?
I don't see that way. I don't see it that way at all. I would think the Y's investment in the city is actually stronger as we're coming out of this pandemic, based on our community service division, the work that we do in non-facility branches. Before we were shut down, we were in 12 different school locations providing care and programming for over 1,000 kids a day. When all of a sudden the schools got shut down, where did those kids go? We started emergency child care. We expanded our programs here at the YMCA to make sure that we were able to accommodate all of those kids that needed to. And then when the schools said they were out for the end of the year, we went to our Quest program that tried to, instead of it being an after-school program and no real curriculum, we started putting curriculum into our program. So we started STEM, we started reading, we started math, based on the fact that we knew that these kids that were coming to our programs, whether it was in an urban environment or a suburban environment, weren't getting the education we needed. So we quickly pivoted to put those programs together. So when you look at what we do in the city, I hope we're not judged on what we do just in our facilities, but what we do in totality and the number of kids that we serve. So as the one gentleman said, he's a Maplewood member. I'm not sure if he realizes we give out 250 meals a day at Maplewood. So we were asked to step up. We were asked by FoodLink to say we need another place to distribute meals in the community. And that fits in right in with what we want to do. So we've staffed that, and we'll continue to staff that for as long as FoodLink wants us to do that. So to say that, you know, we're moving away from the urban environment and into the suburban, I totally disagree with that.
Marilyn in Rochester emails and says, I'm feeling neglected. Unless I missed it, I've heard no mention of plans for the Monroe branch. I'm a Y member, but I don't know about YMCA reopening. So Monroe not reopening now. Kevin, is there any chance that Monroe will not ever reopen?
I don't know what the future holds, Evan. Monroe is a very tough branch to socially distance, along with some of our other branches, but we don't know what the future holds for any of our branches.
Okay, but you know, if I'm a member at Monroe or any of your branches, I understand there's some more space at certain locations than others. But couldn't you change capacity or the flow of people? I mean, is it just a social? I guess what I'm asking is for Marilyn, who emailed, why is Monroe not open?
It
You know, I would say that it's one of our five branches that aren't open in this round. If we need to open more branches, we will look at it just like we will look at expanding our hours. We started with these six, and that's what we're focused on right now.
Okay. I mean, it just didn't happen to be included. But was there a reason specifically for Monroe, Pam?
No, I think it's like, you know, the other ones. We looked at where do we have the traffic, where do we have the membership base, how can we social distance? I mean, there were a number of factors that went into selecting all of them. And it's not the only branch that's not opening. It's one of them. And so I know that we are committed to looking at everything we can once we get through this first phase.
All right, listeners, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. As we talk about the YMCA of Greater Rochester getting ready for reopening 10 days from now, next Friday, Phase 4 is almost certainly coming to our region. Obviously, you know, 10 days, I understand things could change. But Governor Cuomo today saying that we're not only doing well with Phase 3, we're at the lowest numbers of infections, daily deaths with COVID-19. There's no reason to think that we're going to be off track. So what the Y wanted to do this week is say, we don't want to let you know next Thursday. We want you to know now so you can prepare. If you're a member of the Y, if you're thinking about becoming a member of the Y, what's going to be open at least for the short term, throughout the summer, into the fall, and how are they structuring that? They're joining us now to talk about those decisions, Kevin Fitzpatrick and Pam Cowan from the Y of Greater Rochester, and one of the longtime members, Chris Widmeyer, is also with us, and we will get back to some of the feedback from listeners after our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about opioids. New York Times columnist Elizabeth Brunig said that after a recent procedure, a doctor didn't give her a choice. She had to take an opioid prescription. She didn't want it. She said she tore it up immediately. But that has us wondering, how is it supposed to go? Shouldn't we be given more options? We'll take a look at what's happening here in our community next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Leslie in Pittsford writes in to say she knows the Shotland Y is opening, but they are requesting but not requiring masks. That gives her pause. Why are they not requiring masks everywhere except the pool? Pam?
I'm going to give that one to Kevin.
Okay, Kevin Fitzpatrick, go ahead.
Again, as we look through all the requirements that were put out by the state and actually through other states and the CDC, what our policy is that our employees will wear masks, and we ask our staff, we ask our members who are in the facility, if they're not able to socially distance, to go ahead and wear a mask. So we've spread out our facility. So if somebody's on a treadmill, as you can imagine, it would be tough to wear a mask. But the next treadmill that someone is able to use is at least 6 feet away from them. So in that case, we don't think that, you know, there's all sorts of chances. But again, in order for health and safety, if they're within 6 feet, we're asking them to wear a mask. If they're not, especially if they're exercising, we're not requiring them to wear a mask.
Okay. I hope that answers your question, Leslie. Dennis writes to say, Evan, suburban branches make profit to pay for the urban branches that lose money for the Y. You need to get the revenue stream flowing first. This should be obvious. That's from Dennis. Do you agree with that, Kevin?
I do. We have branches, and again, I would tell you that we have branches and programs that surplus dollars that are able to support all of our other urban programs.
Okay, and so Chris, as a longtime member of the Y who's been somewhat critical of their plans for reopening, does that make sense to you?
Somewhat. I mean, it's interesting whether you think about it as an entire, you know, an organization that is the YMCA of Greater Rochester's mission is to serve the entire Rochester community, and you think of the whole thing as a whole, or you break it up into the individual branches. And I mean, their memberships are passport memberships. So while I belong to the Maplewood branch, I can go to any Y I want. And so I think that's an interesting argument when it comes to the fact that they've been investing in facilities that are very far from the city. And so it's very easy to see why people are going, traveling all the way out to the East Side Y. It's beautiful. And the Shotland Y It has amazing amenities. If you look at the list of amenities at the Shotland branch versus the list of amenities at the Southwest branch that's in an old, I can't remember if it's a CVS or a Rite Aid, you know, it's they just don't even compare. So that's where we kind of have to look at the way that the whole system has been set up and the way we talk about things. And then, you know, I think they are also reacting to the way that our community funds things. I think on the other show they were talking about kind of the nonprofit industrial complex. And when you go to the Shotland Y, you see the names of all the people that donated money to make that branch happen. It's everywhere. And so, you know, was it the branch? Was it the opportunity for them to have this amenity out in Pittsford near their homes that was, you know, the motivation? Or was it to support the larger community? And that's, you know, it's a question that our community needs to keep talking about is, you know, how we support the whole community. And so I think that while I see the realities of where the money goes and where the money comes from, I think that there are creative ways that we can think about how we answer those questions. And the YMCA of Greater Rochester answers those questions as an organization as a whole, rather than kind of the individual places and branches.
Well, and so, Kevin, let me build off the point that Chris is making there. You know, I understand when you say that you can't commit, or, you know, you and Pam saying, you know, you can't commit to anything in the future. No one would have known in January that a pandemic was coming, and that threw everything for a loop. And I take that point. But, you know, it may not feel reassuring to listeners in the city of Rochester who are members of the Y to hear you say we're not going to commit to opening Monroe again. We can't make any future promises. You know, so I guess I'll ask you again. I mean, if you're a member at Carlson, if you're a member at Monroe, should you be concerned that there's a chance those will not reopen?
So, I mean, I think the one thing that we're not adding to the conversation is, what about Northwest and what about Bayview? You know, that's part of the conversation too. We're isolating that we're not opening two city branches, but we also need to have in the conversation that we're not opening two suburban branches. So there are members at all of those branches that we feel very dedicated to. And we believe that service to them is paramount. And that's why we would welcome them at any branch. So, you know, I get it. You know, we don't have all the answers. And at this point in time, that's just where we are. We don't have all of the answers. We're 10 days away from hopefully reopening after being closed for more than 100 days. We are doing the very best we can. And I know that all of our answers aren't going to make everyone happy, but that's the best information we have today.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. This is Mel in Penfield. Go ahead, Mel.
Hi, thanks for the show today. Just a couple of comments. I have been a longtime member, as my husband has and our children, of both Bayview and now the Eastside Y. Great supporter of the Y. I think they do have some wonderful programs, but I think they also have to be challenged about the diversity. I mean, I heard the comment about diversity, you don't claim to be 50-50, and I get that. But I've been a Y member for like 40 years, and I can tell you, I go at different times, it's 90% white out in these suburbs. So I think the ability to attract and have programs and have some more diversity is partly on the Y's responsibility. It's also part of the town's responsibility to be able to attract housing and people of color to our towns, because the towns themselves are predominantly white. So I think work needs to be done on all levels. But the other challenge I would say is, what about the salaries of the executive directors in the suburbs to the city? What about the recruitment effort, and what level of education is needed to get into some of those white positions, and how are we supporting people who of color who would be well qualified to be part of the staffing in the Y programs, particularly in the city? I think a lot of work needs to be done on multiple levels from all of us.
All right. Thank you, Mel. Pam, Kevin, you want to address that?
Yeah, I would agree, Pam. I would agree with everything. I'm sure Pam would do the same thing, is agree that we are not as diverse as we like to. And we have some challenges, and we have some opportunities now that we can be better. is that how are we better? How do we continue to improve? And we've had great leadership that has come through the YMCA that has been diverse and minority that have gone on to other places. But again, we know it's an issue. We know we need to address it.
So Kevin, let me give you like sort of some real talk just from my end here. I mean, WXXI's board historically has been pretty white, pretty wealthy. Now, there are some remarkable people in this building who have done a lot of work in recent years to try to really change the representation. And I mean, really repping the full community here. A diverse board, an advisory board, everything about leadership to try to rep serving the community. Because WXXI in some ways, I mean, I see some parallels to what the YMCA's kind of mission is. We're supposed to be serving everyone in the community, particularly the people who need us the most. I think I am proud of the work we do, but I know that we know we can do it better. And that some of that starts with, you know, how we're repped and frankly, how white we are. And when I look at, to your point, Kevin, you know, you're trying to get more diverse. When I look at the board of directors, the executives, the main page there, I mean, 13 out of 14 to me, I think are white people. I mean, I could be wrong, but is that an issue right now? Do you think that the WISE leadership is too white?
Do I think it's too white?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I think we are not representative of the communities that we serve, and we still need to do better at that. And we work with that through our branch boards and bring them up through there. So yeah, we have work to do. It's not lost on us is what our community is and what our makeup is at the Y.
And Chris, I think that's a frank point. And I think that, you know, Chris, you're somebody who's written a lot about this in this community, the need to be introspective of that. As a member of the YMCA, is that heartening for you to hear?
Yeah, and I really hope that there is some action around that, because I think that, you know, any organization benefits from diverse perspectives, no matter what they are. But here in Rochester, you definitely need Black voices to be involved in leadership and the decision making. And I think that, you know, with that comes a greater awareness of what the community actually needs. And so some of the assumptions that are being made about, you know, how the Y needs to operate or what branches are viable or not viable can be challenged, because I know that there are great needs that the Y is serving in the community, but they could serve better, you know. And I think, for example, you know, in what branches were opened, I don't know if any consideration was given to bus access, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, the Northwest Y and the Bayview Y were not open, even though those are the Ys that are closest to the city limits and our suburban Ys that are actually on bus routes. And so that's, you know, all part of the picture, that when you don't have perspectives represented, you know, people that have to take the bus to get to the Y on your board and in your leadership, then you don't even think about those things. And I would like to believe that, you know, the people that are running the Y want to be serving the community the best that they can. And you just can't if you don't have particular voices represented in your leadership. So I really look forward to seeing the YMCA doing more in that area and just kind of acknowledging generally the role that race has played in the YMCA and its development. I was kind of looking at the YMCA's history today and there was no mention of when the Ys were integrated in the history of the YMCA, but
Chris, let me interrupt you right there. Is that the Ys were integrated back in 1946 is when the National Y came out and talked about non-discrimination. Now, did every Y get to that point? It took some Ys longer to do that, but 1946 was about 20 years before the Civil Rights Movement. So the YMCA was a leader in integration when looking at how it needed to serve the cities and the makeup of the communities that it served.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I know here in Rochester that Dr. Charles Lunsford, you know, pressed the Y to integrate, that there was somebody, I forget, it was even before that, I think sometime in between the 20s and 30s. And so absolutely that there's a history that is important for us to understand. And I'm glad that, you know, you're aware of that history nationally. And so we need to think about that locally, because the Maplewood Y right now is everything I want our community to be and I don't go to the Monroe Y very often, but I would believe it's the same. And I think that needs to be, we need to keep thinking about those things, and that needs to be prioritized of, you know, how do we make a YMCA of Greater Rochester that is for everybody and gives everybody the equal opportunity to have an opportunity to swim in a beautiful pool, or, you know, to have a maker space available to them in their neighborhoods and in their communities. So.
And so let's talk about investments, because obviously the Y just opened Shotland out in Pittsford. Maplewood, I think, Kevin and Pam, the last big investment in the city was Maplewood about a decade ago. Is that right? And what would you say the next big investment in city facilities will be for the Y?
We don't know, but if you've seen what our history is, we invested in our Eastside Y in Penfield. We jumped to our urban initiative, which is Maplewood, which we invested it in. Then we went to Shotland. So we know that we need to make an investment into the city. What that looks like, who we partner with, how that happens, we're not sure yet. But we know that we need to do that.
And what happens if, you know, to Pam's point about maybe 20% of members will kind of come back in that first week, and then you'll get more and more and more. What happens if the locations that are opening up experience a surge in membership, you know, for example, whether it's Maplewood in the city having a lot, you know, the other branches closing, if Maplewood gets flooded or if other branches get flooded, what would the plan be, you know, regarding ours? Is that sort of a, you handle that as it happens, Pam?
I'll go ahead, Kevin, but I would just jump in real quick. I said I would sleep for the first time in 100 days if more people came back and we had lots of usage at our Y's. That's our hope. That's what we're trying to do. But I'll let Pam talk about our phases and how we're looking to open up otherwise.
Okay.
So I think it's a fair question, and I think that it comes back to we won't know until it happens. But let's use your scenario. Let's say, you know, we have Maplewood and we see that the demand is high. What would we look at first? Well, we need to hear from our members. Is it they need a Sunday option or that they need longer hours? We make decisions the best we can, and that we are going to use those members who are coming back and who are supporting us and who are sustaining us to help drive those future decisions. So if the population at Maplewood is driving for more weekend hours or longer hours, that's what we'll start looking at. So there is no specific blueprint, just like everything that's happened in this pandemic. If I had talked to you on, you know, March 12th, I would have told you we were about to sponsor the Running of the Green and, you know, life was great and everything was going fine. And 2 days later, the world kind of turned on its head for us. So the blueprints that we had 100 days ago don't exist anymore. We're starting a whole new playbook and we're doing the best we can. And with that member feedback, as we start to open, we will start looking at those hours and days and increase as demand increases.
All right, briefly, Melissa says, if I'm on a treadmill 6 feet away from another person for half an hour and the air isn't circulating out of the room, what good does distance do? She's concerned just about infection there. Are most of your equipment going to be open and available as normal?
Now, again, about 50% of our equipment will be open
about
as
50%.
Normal.
Okay.
But we've increased our air circulation to 100% outdoors. So basically, we're getting as much air circulation as we can into those buildings. So before, you're always concerned about, you know, mixing air and energy conservation. Right now, we're just going to have as much outside air coming into the building as we can to change that over.
Okay, and as we get
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as we get ready to wrap here, Chris, as a longtime member of the Y and as someone who's rooting for the Y to succeed for everyone, some final thoughts from you. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that they're putting all this thought into how they're opening the Y's and that they do serve our community in some incredible ways. And I want to make sure that, you know, that this conversation helps them think a little more broadly about how they're making decisions. And, you know, I think that it also hopefully, you know, when the time is right and when we're out of a crisis mode, it will help lead to some more and changes and more urgent change around diversity and who the YMCA is serving and how. And I appreciate that they were, you know, both of you, Pam and Kevin, were open to having this conversation today.
All right. And Kevin, some final thoughts from you as I mean, again, I acknowledge that, You know, there are always going to be critics, and there's also members very happy to see you opening. But for those who have been concerned about the plan, who feel that maybe it includes some but not all of the community, some final thoughts from you, Kevin Fitzpatrick.
I would say that we're ready to open. We want to open. We're going to do it as safe as we can. I can't wait to get back to serving our community. And we know, and I know, that we're not perfect all the time, but we'll try to change, reevaluate, and move forward. And that's what the Y is about, serving the community.
30 seconds, Pam Cowan.
You know, it's all about the big welcome back, and I echo that the same way. You know, it's going to be a new Y. It's a new day for everyone. We are open to hearing from our members. We are open to serving our members. This is going to be a bit of a trial and error, and together we're going to get through it. We've got a new member, kind of conscious community member code, and we're really asking people, come back to the Y and partner with us. Let's do this together. Together, we will bring this Y back to the grand nature it was before we closed.
Kevin Fitzpatrick and Pam Cowan from the YMCA of Greater Rochester laying out the plan as we move toward Phase 4 next Friday. That's 10 days away, and the YMCA ready for its reopening. Thanks to both of you for making time for the program this hour.
Hey, thanks, Evan.
And Chris Widmeyer, longtime member of the YMCA. Chris, thanks for making time, and Aaron, your thoughts as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. And listeners, let's keep these conversations flowing as we think about reopening in different phases. And you want to check in on a lot of different things happening in our community. We'll keep this going for you right here on Connections. We've got more Connections coming up next.